Well, welcome. I know that folks sort of migrate into the session, so as folks come in, you might, if you have a chair next to you, you might send them your way. Welcome to our session on reforming worship. We'll start with some introductions, then we'll have some conversation together. There'll be a little bit of time to do a practice, and then we will actually do worship together. This is a two-hour session, but it will go very quickly. So an hour in, we will move over to the VC, and we will do a 30-minute worship, and then we'll spend the last half hour in conversation about it. The worship that we are doing today is the worship that we will be doing on Thursday night. And so that's not to put any pressure on you or put you on the spot, but I hope that the way you participate today, you might also consider participating in Thursday night in that same way. So know that ahead of time, but it's not anything to worry about yet. So let's start with some introductions. Why don't we go around the room, tell us your name, and what is intriguing to you about this idea of reforming worship? And why did you come to this session? So whoever would like to start, we'll just go around.
I'm married to Mindy, and I came to this session. For a long time, I would be able to go to Treehouse to Mindy's campus ministry weekly worship, and since we've had Andrew in London, I'm on daddy duty while Mindy's having her weekly service. So this is an opportunity for me to kind of get a clearer window and picture of kind of the new forms of worship that Mindy has been developing and working on. So that's fine.
I'm from Missoula, Montana, and I chose to come to this session because I think there are a lot of different forms of worship that I'm maybe a little more used to the traditional Lutheran services, and just also kind of getting to know maybe a little bit more of the different variations that are out there. And I know that youth my age are probably taking a little bit more traditional, or a little bit of a different path towards worship practices. So,
great. From Missoula as well. I came to see what some new ideas were. I think we, you know, have more an older congregation for the most part, but have some new families, and over the years have always been interested in alternative ways of worshiping, just because people have different ideas, and just want to see what some new things are.
Rachel's godmother. And at our church at St. Paul's, once a month we have an alternative, more of a modern worship service, and just getting some other ideas, you know, for that, see what's out there.
Quincy, Washington, just 2 hours from the boat, so it's easy to get here. And I'm a retired music type person, choir director, organist, all that. But I'm for the first time on a church council, which I've never been before because I've been on staff, but and we're working on some things for worship and wanting to learn new things.
I am a pastor on the beginning of a 3-month sabbatical. And so this is my 3 months to explore and learn and step out of my role as pastor, which I am appreciating right now.
I'm just always interested in the education stuff here at Holden.
And I'm Linda Wink, married to Don. And just like Don, we're always wanting to learn new ways and new things.
Remember St. Paul, Missoula, as a bunch of other people here are. Idle curiosity is the reason I came here. But in addition, that our congregation started a contemporary service a couple of years ago, which is, some people rave about it, and some people are, I gather, maybe still resistant to it.
But, a few, but it's not many.
Pretty well
and some people, that's their favorite service, okay. So it's got a mixed reaction. So I'm just curious.
Oh, we'll swing back over here. We'll let Todd sit.
In San Antonio, Texas. I'm not teaching currently, but Carl and I interact with a lot of probably the same kind of people you're working with, young Texans. So
traditional services very well. I'm not sure why. I haven't figured that out why, but I know what I go towards the new, different, contemporary, whatever term you want to call. So I'm really intrigued by your what you're going to be sharing.
Okay.
I'm Mary in the fall, and sort of from that perspective, I'm curious, but also just a general curiosity about thinking about worship differently.
Yeah. Harbor, Washington. I'm on the worship committee at our church. It's a very church, very open to innovative kinds of worship, and Holden is always, for me, in many years being here, a place to gather new ideas and insights and often things that we can add to our repertoire of interesting new things.
Okay. I'm living at Holden from Massachusetts, and we lived in Seattle for 3 years recently, and we ended up going to two churches. We're members of Church of Brethren, which is a very non-liturgical, we had communion twice a year church. But in the evening, we went to Church of the Apostles, which was Episcopalian Lutheran church with most people under 35. And it had the worship director planned worship with the congregation, so it has a very different kind of worship with not much of a sermon. And Lacey came from the Orthodox background, so it was very intriguing worship, and so I'm really intrigued now because it was still very liturgical, but it wouldn't go in the category of when people do contemporary. It was a little different than that. So,
Virginia, Minnesota, and I always understand worship as evolving as the church tries to relativize word and sacrament to a given place and a given time. And so I'm always looking at what other people are doing to see if that's what I ought to be doing.
Sure.
Grew up in the Methodist church, went to a Methodist college, DePaul University, started singing in choirs and taking organ lessons. When I got to graduate school, I got a job as an organist, assistant organist and choir director at an Episcopal church, and they became later confirmed the Episcopal church, and later on my next organ job was at a Lutheran church, choir director, and I was a chemistry professor at Pacific Lutheran University for practically my entire career. And been organist and choir director at Lutheran and Episcopal churches, but now just singing only one choir instead of three as I used to, including the broadcast of the Compline service from St. Mark's Episcopal Cathedral in Seattle, Washington. Wow. Sang in that choir for half a century.
Wow. That's beautiful. Cool.
St. Paul Lutheran Church in Missoula. I'm a visiting musician here this week. And I'm really interested in how irrelevant the church has become in a couple of generations. Just astonishingly. Like from being center of the dominant culture to peripheral. We talk about this a lot on staff. And so in that mix is, then what is worship? I mean, wow. I just have a lot more questions than answers about worship and what it should. Everything exists in tension, and if you don't believe that, try to do worship planning.
Especially by committee.
Yeah. No, I do. There's no committee. It's hard enough for one person to hold the eye, I think.
That's true. Well, welcome, everyone. Glad that you are here. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about where I serve and how we have come to worship, but I want us to wrestle with a couple of questions before we get to my context. So I first want you to think about the most meaningful experience of worship that you have ever had in your life. So you can only pick one. It doesn't have to be a certain service, but something that sort of stands out for you as the most meaningful experience of worship. And then once you identify that, I want you to think for a moment about why. Why it was the most meaningful. So take a couple minutes, and then we'll have some conversation. So the most meaningful experience of worship that you have had, and then
and tell us why. But do all this in a paragraph, not an essay. Briefly tell us a little bit about it. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So mine would probably be at Flathead Lutheran Bible Camp, which I attended multiple summers in a row when I was younger. And probably for two reasons. One, a lot of the services would be outdoors. And I think I probably feel the most connected to God when I'm outside. And the second reason, being surrounded by a lot of other kids my age, helped when I wanted to ask questions or get another perspective.
Great. Who else? Tell us about the most meaningful and why. Yeah, go ahead.
My son and I were able to attend the Bondi Thursday service in the Old City of Jerusalem at the Church of the Redeemer. Mm-hmm. My son is married to a Jewish woman, and we were visiting her parents for Passover, and it happened to be the same week of the Triduum. And my son is not converted to Judaism, but he and I attended the service. And during the Lord's Prayer, well, the clergy were 8 different countries represented of Lutheranism. Mm-hmm. And so when you went to communion, the clergy person could have all different kinds of vestments and whatever. Mm-hmm. But the most meaningful part for me was when we were invited to speak the Lord's Prayer in the language.
Mm-hmm. In your own language. Mm-hmm.
And so hearing all these different languages, it was very much a global Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we'll say kind of a global, but there's a kind of an element of diversity to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. At least diverse languages. Great. What else? What else? We want to everyone, but we'll get a few out. Okay.
For me, it's not a specific service or anything, but just so often the music mm-hmm. is just such a big thing for me. And the words of hymns or the words of what the choir is singing or something just really speaks to me.
Okay.
It's just so relevant.
Yeah. So it's the music and the words of the songs.
The words of the music.
Who else?
This is more a worshipful experience as opposed to a pure worship service, but I had the opportunity when I was in college to sing in the Handel's Messiah with 900 voice choir. I mean, it was not just the singers of choirs, but the whole student body and alumni, whatever. And it was very powerful, and that whole musical experience a more spiritual sense of connectedness with God. I think it's really powerful.
So would you say it was the size of it that made it meaningful?
And the music, and the combination of the music, the words, and certainly the size of the...
The strength of the...
Yeah.
Great. Who else? We'll do a couple more.
I have one really special. We climbed Mount Sinai in the Gaza Strip, and when we got to the top, then we had a really special worship service because we weren't allowed to talk all the way up, so we could hear God talk to us.
Interesting. So for the meaningful part of it was both sort of place and silence.
Yes.
Okay. That's really powerful. Who else?
I really don't have a specific place because I've gone to church in Libya and Africa, all over Europe, and then coming here to Holden and experiencing the Sunday Eucharist service in various ways. Those have been very, very great. Because I grew up in a very traditional Lutheran, so I had this set pattern all the time, when I was growing up. And so for going out and experiencing Episcopal or Anglican and Roman Catholic and all of the different variations in Europe and Africa and Haiti, and then coming here and seeing the differences here. And then I was part of the AELC church that formed before, and one of the that formed the ELCA. Mm-hmm. And when that came together in Portland, Oregon, there was a, what I would call the Lutheran High Church. And it was, that was kind of special. It was like being at Holden, mm-hmm. the Eucharist, a special Eucharist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was neat.
So, to me, it's
the variation, I think.
Right, yeah. And really the variation of place, right?
Yeah. Well, then, yeah.
So, kind of, we'll say the variation of both the liturgy and the place where it's, it happens. Great. I know there's lots more, and they can sort of creep out as we go or as they come to mind, but holding these together, I want us to wrestle with, we're going to wrestle with three questions, one each session. So today's question will be, then what is worship? And then our next session will be, is what is essential in worship? And then what does it mean to be present in worship? So for today, the question is kind of a general, what is worship? I am not a liturgical theologian. I'm not a liturgical scholar. I am a pastor who practices with people regularly. And so I appreciate the work of liturgical scholars. I learn from them. I read them. But I'm for this session, I'm a little more interested in what sort of bubbles up from the ground as what is worship to you? What is meaningful to you? What happens for something to become worship? So less of a formal definition and more of what is worship? How do you know? Why does this feel like worship where a or just a walk outside doesn't, right? So what makes something worship? So let's wrestle with that. What is worship? Throw some things out.
Praise,
great. Mm-hmm. What else?
Prayer.
A gathering of people.
Right.
Community. Mm-hmm. Ritual.
Storytelling.
Singing.
Listening.
Holy Word.
Repentance and forgiveness. Or confession.
Communion.
God's Word, certainly. The Bible.
And I also think it's a pushing away of everything that's not those things. It's mm-hmm. a sanctuary, it's a space and time that's
space apart.
Yeah, pushes all that other stuff out there.
Mm-hmm. And the sacredness.
Yeah. Did I leave the car lights on? And is my mother-in-law going to call again tonight? Or what? All those things. You just that's not. I'll worry about that later.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a very here and now experience. Mm-hmm. If you can get your mind there.
Somebody mentioned confessional, but I think confessional in the sense of creedal.
Mm. Mm.
I don't know.
It's two.
Yeah.
Oh,
see?
It works. We know what it is.
What else?
It engages your whole self, both senses and also heart, body, spirit, all at once.
Severing, in other words.
This is, and this is the theme for Fridays. This is the whole thing. So, So a lot of these are elements of worship, right? If you were to put all these together and say, what is happening in worship? How would you put that into a sentence? What is happening in worship? What's going on in worship? What's it about?
You're getting outside yourself.
Okay.
Vulnerability.
Okay. I think we presume to sit with God, which is pretty nervy.
The fact that we sleep through worship often, in the face of what we claim about what happens in worship, you say the creator of the universe is coming to you. I did the same thing, but
I tell you, a pastor that I kind of trained with years ago, when it was kind of a mean trick of his, but whenever the ushers learned not to come and say, is anything special happening today, because he would always reply, well, Jesus will.
So that's a good transition.
I wonder if we ever really expect that.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is where I want to push us then to what is a Lutheran approach to worship, right? So you go to an evangelical gathering, and there's an emphasis on praise, right? And it seems to be about one's move up towards God, right? I mean, that's even the direction of hands. It's we are coming towards God, right? But Lutherans claim something really, really, really profoundly different in worship, right? What do we claim in worship?
Incarnation.
Yeah.
Jesus is present.
Jesus is present.
In word and water.
Right. Yes. So the Lutheran approach to worship, which Lutherans don't have a corner on this, is that the direction of worship is down like this, right? And so not necessarily that God is up here and coming down, but that God is always coming to us and through us and sending us in worship, right? And so it is not this, I need to come to God, I need to make myself right before God. It is God is always coming down in all of these things, right? In storytelling, in ritual, in holy word, in forgiveness. Everything we do in worship is the receiving of God coming through us, right? That is radical, right? What do you think of that? You know this as a Lutheran, but what do you think of,
To me, it's the arrow was going both ways. Because of the praise that's going up, the confession that is going up, even though Jesus is here, it's going, those things are going out, but certainly the coming in too.
So it feels more conversational, right?
And yeah.
So, okay, fair enough.
Both ways.
Right. Yeah, go ahead.
I think it also implies another direction, which is horizontal. Mm-hmm. That it's not
that's
just God,
ending.
You know, Jesus is my boyfriend.
Right.
But how we then
connect to each other,
branch out toward the other.
Mm-hmm. So it's a, sort of a, well, this isn't going to make a lot of sense, but a recognition that God's coming is a communal coming, right? And a knitting of us together.
Somewhere I got the visual of the cross, and there's an arrow both going up and down with the cross and arrows at the end. So up and down and
out.
To out.
Right. That's great. Other thoughts? Or actually other, I don't want to say thoughts, I want to say other reactions, right? We make this really, really, really bold claim every Sunday, and yet what is meaningful to us is not generally the Sunday experience, right? It doesn't pop up as, hey, that Sunday 3 years ago, nothing special was happening, but it was deeply meaningful because God came in water and word, God was present, God fed me, God fed my neighbors, God sent me into the world. It was profound, and then it happened again the next week, right? But we don't say that, right? And so what do you think that disconnect is about the things that feel meaningful and then what we claim actually happens?
So I just had this experience. So last Sunday we had a baptism in our church, and young Lucas was 18 months old, and poor mom struggled like crazy to keep him under control in the pew. And just it was a nonstop battle. I'm watching this take place. And at several points, Lucas gets up, and he goes over to the baptismal font, because his family's sitting close by, and he's feeling it. He's a very tactile little boy. He's feeling it and trying to see what this thing is that he had never seen before in his life. And so the word that came to me was wonderer. He was in a mode of wonder.
Nice. Yeah.
And I think that word applies to all the things that our most meaningful was, mm-hmm. was when there was something about worship that struck us very deeply with wonder. And that probably isn't going to happen every seventh day that we go to, you know, it just isn't realistic that that's going to happen every Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. But there are certain times when some part of the experience is different. And deeper, and we react with wonder.
Sure. Yeah, and what, so to transition into my context, I work with students and young adults at Texas A&M. Texas A&M is, I think it's considered the most conservative theological or conservative university, public university in the U.S., and that's significant because it's conservative theologically as well. And so the default among students is kind of this evangelical, even fundamentalist background. And so we are the Lutheran Campus Ministry there, and as you can tell, in a setting like that, it means something, right? It means our identity is really distinct. So I talk with campus ministry colleagues who serve in other areas of the country, and their distinctness is against a different culture. So my colleague at the University of Minnesota says we are different than the atheists, because that is the default. And we say, well, we are like, the atheists are our best friends, because no one likes the atheists and no one likes us. So, so anyways, our identity is really distinct in this setting. And so our group is probably about half Cradle Lutherans, mostly Cradle Lutherans from Texas. And the other half is kind of everything else. So we have a large number, we have these signs on campus that are really provocative. People hate them. They rip them down. It's a joke in our group. Well, how long will this sign last, right? And they draw in all sorts of folks. And so one of, like, our most recent signs said, what if the church cared more about poverty than your sex life, right? And another one was, there's this big thing in Texas right now of like, guns. I don't know if this is outside of Texas, but, like guns. And then it says, come and take it, right? I don't know if you guys have seen this. Yeah. So we put in the communion elements, bread and wine, and said, come and take it, and put a big sign on campus. And then we put up lots of categories, you know, gay, straight, red, blue, whatever. And then we filled a whole sign with sort of opposite categories and said, you are welcome here, right? That one gets ripped down a lot. People hate the idea that there's space in the church for everyone,
diversity.
Really. Yeah, for diversity. So those signs pull in an interesting segment of the population at Texas A&M. We get a lot of evangelicals who have burned out of that culture for some reason. Sometimes it's around sexuality. Sometimes it's just, I can't work any harder to be right with God. I need something different. Mm-hmm. They come in able to articulate that, right? They know that they are looking for something different. We get sort of folks from more conservative traditions, Catholic students who also something has broken, right? And they're in a space of wanting to be in the church and wanting to be in faith, but this expression doesn't work for them anymore. And then we get this interesting mix of the nuns, right? N-O-N-E-S, students who have grown up with no faith tradition. Their family didn't practice any sort of faith. I was telling a story about, we had a student who, he stepped into our worship space one night and he said, oh, so this is a church? I've never been inside of a church, right? Mm-hmm. So he was 18 and had never stepped inside of a church, right? And then the boyfriends and the girlfriends, right, who come from a different tradition, but it's important to be with their significant other. So we have this really, really interesting mix of students. But of our Lutheran students are not, they're not, I don't know how to say this nicely, they're not church geeks, right? And so they don't, they've got a foot out the door. They are ready to leave the church, and yet they don't, there's something that pulls them back in. They want a spiritual life. They want something that has meaning. And they sense that the church is it, but the church hasn't been that for them, right? So these are students who come for theology on tap. They come for Bible study. They're really intrigued by Lutheran approaches to how we read Scripture. But the worship life, they tolerate, right? I don't think I have a single student that says Sunday worship is the most meaningful part of my faith. And so there's a couple of things that I take from that. One is that
for these students, we haven't taught them how to worship, right? So we plop them into a worship service as children, and they're bored, right? It happens over their head. It happens around alongside of them. There's no instruction in how do you engage in this liturgy, is the first one. The second one is this contextual piece, right? If I were to do what we do on a Sunday morning in a campus ministry space, they would walk out, right? This is not, this is the context for creativity, for innovation. We know that with one foot out the door already, we had better show up with the essentials, with the good stuff, or they're going to leave. They won't tolerate the rest of it. I was telling a story. I have this one student who, she's a staff member. She's a young staff member and has been evangelical her whole life. Saw one of our signs and decided to come check us out. So she first came to have coffee with me, and we talked theology. Then she went to our Theology on Tap and decided that she was Lutheran. After several months of engaging theologically with us, said, yeah, I think I'm a Lutheran. This fits who I am. And then decided to go to worship in one of our sponsoring churches. So not worship with us, but worship in a local parish. And she came back and she said, what was that? You offer this theology of incredible grace, and you package it in a way that is not accessible. She said, I felt like an outsider. You give me a theology of being an insider, and then this worship makes me feel like an outsider. Mm-hmm. And she said, I won't go back. She said, I'll be a Lutheran, but I will not go back to that. She said, I don't know how to do that. So that sort of stuck with me. So then how do we do worship in this context? First of all, we pay attention to context. We know that there are this huge variety of stories in the room, and that we... And that's a challenge, right? I mean, it's easy to worship with people who come from the exact same background, or it's easier, or maybe not. Maybe it's not easy at all. But with this huge variety, it gives us actually a lot of room for creativity and innovation. But it is also the must, right? There must be creativity and innovation, or they walk. We know that. So we have settled into six styles of worship that we move between. They're not original to us, not all of them. One of them is prayer on the cross, which our students love. And part of that is how we settled on these styles of worship is we began with this question of what is the need, right? So I don't know if you're familiar with St. Lydia's, the dinner church in is it in Brooklyn? I'm not sure. Are you familiar with St. Lydia's? Mm-hmm. Oh, you are. St. Lydia's is a dinner church. It's a Lutheran dinner church. And it is just that. So the community comes together. There's a meal that they prepare together. They sit, and the liturgy happens around the table, right?
It's a storefront, right?
Yeah, it's a storefront.
You walk in what could be a dress shop.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And it's a church. It's a Lutheran church. Mm-hmm. It's great. If you get a chance to visit it or even just to look it up online, it's worth hearing their story. But the founder of it, who is a Lutheran pastor, I went to seminary with her. She's my age. She talks about the question for reforming worship for them was, what is the need? And so in New York City, they recognize the need is to sit down together, right? You don't. If you live in New York City, you're on the go all the time. Your meals are on the go. Everything's on the go. You don't sit down for meals with other people. And so listening to that need helped them create this church. And this church has been written up in The Atlantic. I'm not sure if it's been in the New York Times. It's sort of been all over the place. But Emily, the former pastor, comes back to this is, what is the need in your community? So we play with that question of what is the need. We have tried dinner church. Students like it, but it's not the need. Mm-hmm. And so as we wrestle with different types of worship, that's what we're looking at. What is the spiritual faith need that this stuff answers? So surprisingly, prayer on the cross answers a need for students, and that is the need for touch. And so students are away from families. Touch is mostly sexualized in college, right? There's no sort of touch that is not. And so here is an invitation to a worship that is not that. It is or an invitation to touch that is not complex, right? It is laying on of hands, it is praying, and it feels really sacred to students. So we do this one as one of our six invitations. Another one that we play with is we just moved into an Episcopal church. We outgrew our old space, and so we've moved into an Episcopal space, and they have, you know, the rose, the high altar. It's their old chapel that we use. And so students like the idea of putting into this space something that disrupts the liturgy, right? And so if we're going to do, we did a night on racism, and students said, we want to do racism in this church, right, in this space, because this approach to faith needs the critique of conversation around racism, right? We did confirmation, we had a confirmation this year, and students wanted to do a public examination of the candidates in a very sweet way, not putting them on the spot, embarrassing them, but just a playful, tell us who you are, tell us your story. They wanted to do that in the church, right? Because this was a way that they had not been confirmed, right? This invited students to, those being confirmed, to be sort of their full selves, which is not what a lot of our Lutherans felt in confirmation, right? It wasn't the age to let them be their full selves. So whenever we do things that feel like it is a challenge to the faith that a lot of them have known, they want to do it in the chapel, right? They want the old feel of a new thing. And then we do a few other services, and we're going to sort of sample three of those this week. But the one that we're going to do today has become kind of the signature worship of this group. It is the one that they have gathered around the most. And it's the easiest one that I think, if you are looking to innovate worship, this is kind of a really easy one to start with and to play with. And this one's called The Living Room. And it came from asking students to play with this idea. We have a lot who come from campus or from outdoor ministry. We have a lot of camp staff or people who have gone to camp, right? And this is meaningful worship to them, right? But they recognize that it's meaningful worship designed for children, for the most part, children and youth. And they are not that anymore. And so we asked them to play with this idea of what does it mean to take worship that is meaningful and kind of grow it up, right? Make it meaningful to your community. So what they came up with is this living room. I'm trying to figure out how much I want to tell you about it before we experience it. I don't think I want to tell you about it. I think I just want to invite you into it. I just want to invite you to experience it. But to do that, we're going to have a little bit of an exercise for maybe 10-ish minutes around a theme. And so when we do the living room, this is a kind of a thematic worship, and we give students a week or 2 weeks in advance to play with a theme. And it's a theme that comes out of Scripture. So the theme that we are going to play with is Holden's theme for the summer, Fear Not. We are doing it like this, fear or fear not. And in this worship, we invite students to take some time and write, draw, photograph, something that gives some type of artistic expression to this theme for them, right? So they might write a poem, they might write a sort of mini essay, maybe just a reflection, a drawing. They'll often come with photography that they've taken, that they've printed out. And then in the worship, where the sermon would come, we invite students to take 1 minute, they only get 1 minute, to speak to this theme through this medium of mostly of art that they have used in response to it. And you'll see how this works, and you'll see once you see the space, you'll see why this works. But that's what I'm going to give us about 10 minutes to sort of do this as an exercise. It's not enough time to ask you to do anything significant around the theme, but it's enough to get us sort of speaking together in worship. So before we move on to that, let me see, are there any questions about what we've done this morning? We'll do this and then we'll transition into a different space.
Mindy, do you switch out when you have worship? Anything as time of day or days or...
No, we do it on Tuesday nights, Tuesday nights are intentional for a few reasons. We are one of just two campus ministries that's welcoming of LGBTQ persons, and we used to meet on Thursday night, they used to meet on Thursday night, and the other ministry that was welcoming met on Thursday night, so you had to pick and choose. So we moved to Tuesday night. We do keep it on Tuesday night. Some of them, I think we'll offer one during the day as a break from classes, come and do one of these shorter ones. I think we'll do that this year, but yeah, we stick to one night.
So you have your campus ministry and you have your campus ministry worship. Mm-hmm. Are they equally effective at inviting new people in, or do the kids have to start with the community and then learn how to do the worship with this new group that they met? Or
sure. So our Tuesday nights look like from about 6:15 to 7 we serve dinner. And so that's really the easiest way to enter in the community.
Okay.
From 7 to 8, we offer some type of program. So it might be a panel on the refugee crisis. It might be four options for spirituality. We might have a spiritual director in that night. We might have someone working in mental health who can help us talk about mental health and spirituality. So it's student-directed, student-decided programs that then the staff creates. So that's an hour. And then the last half hour, 8 to 8:30, is worship. So they meet the community at dinner.
Yeah.
And so they sort of get comfortable in the program and then do worship.
So it is a kind of dinner church. It's a variation on that order of how things are presented.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And dinner is hospitality. Right?
We thought about incorporating a dinner church element in our Monday evening service, just FYI, St. Paul people. I mean, it's not there, but we keep being intrigued by the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's dinner church is surprisingly easy. I mean, you really are just putting the liturgy around a dinner table.
It's almost like the different pieces of liturgy are courses that come with along with
right.
It. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions before we do a little exercise? Okay, good. So, let me pass out some paper and some pins and or markers. We'll pass around. So again, things that you might do, you might sketch something, you might write something. If you want to answer a specific question, it might be, where is fear in my life? Where is fear in my body? Where is fear in the world? Or where is fear not in the world or my body or whatnot? But you can really, really take this anywhere. If you have a picture on your phone that speaks to this theme, pull that out. But we're going to have about 10 minutes to play with this theme of fear not, empowering you respond to it. Is that clear? Any questions on what we're doing?
I don't know what
you guys are doing. Sure. So, however you respond to the theme fear, fear not, you can write, you can draw, you can tell a story. When you hear fear, What sort of comes to your mind? You can just respond to that.
Let me break it down.
Great. So, draw a picture, or tell a story, or make a list of all the things that elicit fear in you. Okay. I know this may not feel like a finished product. That's okay. This might feel like the very worst you bring to the... That's okay. Really, right now, these are placeholders for what happens in this form of worship. Like I said, on Thursday night, this will be the form of worship that will be offered to the community. So my hope is that that you guys would be willing to take a couple days to play with this theme. And so if there is a poem, if there's a letter, if there is a small piece of writing, picture, anything that in the next couple of days you develop or spend some time around, bring that. But also, you can also bring this, right? This is our human sort of bringing our full selves. It doesn't need to be the very best of what we bring. It can just be what we bring. The hope of this service, as you'll see through these three different services, is they each emphasize a different theme. For students, what we say about this service is that this is an invitation for you to be honest about who you are and what you bring, right? So our next service will be kind of an invitation to slowing down in the liturgy, to linger where it feels necessary to linger. And then our last one will be an invitation for you to be sort of bodily. What does it mean to be bodily present in worship? Bring what you bring, and for Thursday night, bring this, or step it up and bring something else. That's all good. So what we'll do now is we will transition over to the VC. And so you'll see as we walk in that the space is already set up for worship. It's set up for the living room. It'll look like a living room. And so as you come in, you will need to grab an ELW, not the one under your chair. I'm sorry we didn't get to. There's a whole section I want to talk about worship. We'll get to that next time. But to leave that ELW here, As we go over there, grab an ELW as we come in, and then you'll just need to come into this space. You'll see several couches in the front. Sit on a couch. If you're the first one in, sit on a couch. There's a couple spaces on the floor. If you're comfortable on the floor, sit on the floor. But then there's two sort of longer rows. And so if the couches are full, then just sit on the longer rows that are right there. And we will go from there. Todd is going to be playing for us. One of the songs you might not recognize, Todd will play it all the way through so that you recognize it. All right, let's go.